Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight with me, Tian Wei. Chinese President Xi Jinping has made the rounds in central China's Hunan province. A focus of the trip is the development of new quality productive forces and opening up. The efforts are stepping up with the General Office of the State Council's action plan, which seeks to promote high-level opening up and attract foreign investment. How can the inspection move things along? What does it tell us about China's commitment to opening up? For more insights, let's loop in our panelists. In Shenzhen, we have Xiao Geng, director of the Institute of Policy and Practice with Shenzhen Finance Institute at the Chinese University of Hong Kong in Shenzhen. In Beijing, Liu Baocheng, dean of the Center for International Business and Economics from the University of International Business and Economics. Welcome to both of you, gentlemen. Now, we understand there must be something in it when the Chinese media have been putting so much effort in reporting about one trip made by the Chinese president to central part of China, to the province of Hunan. Why is it, Professor Liu, to you, what caught your eyes?
Chinese open door policy and domestic reform, first, they working hand in hand in synchronization, and they are really mutually supportive. And the other part is that Chinese open door and reform was conducted on a gradual but a rigorous basis to spread from the coastal area to the central China and then extend to all across the nations. Hunan as an important mission where the Communist Party, actually a large part, was really born in Hunan. And now President Xi is there to strengthen the fact that now we need an institutional opening towards the world, and Hunan is having the Chinese communist the tradition. But in the meantime, they also have every condition to open further to the global market in terms of the high quality manufacturing, in terms of innovation, and also integrating the regional collaboration with the neighboring provinces.
I see. Professor Xiao, you are now sitting in Shenzhen, which is the front line of China's reform and opening up back in the 1990s. So tell me more, when you are looking at a piece of news like this, what immediately came to your mind?
Well, I think our leaders is now focusing on the economy and particularly on the people. I think Hunan is one of the inland province with quite a big population. And I think currently the Chinese economy needs really to restart. So I think the signal is very clear that our leaders would like us to really do something to jumpstart the economy. And it is using a kind of slogan, you know, which is trying to bring a lot of incentives and good things, putting them together.
So it seems that both of you are suggesting this is quite a symbolic move, not only about the efforts needed for developing the economy and the growth of the economy, but also to indicate there is a need and also actions followed to synchronize the movement of both the inland area together with the places in China which are already quite opening to the outside world. But besides that, Professor Liu, I know there are several areas of reform and opening up particularly being mentioned during this trip. It involves directions of innovation and also collaboration. Tell me more about that.
Well, when we say it's a symbolic, it is also very substantial because over the past few years of the disruption by the pandemic, it was not only isolating people, but also hampered the people's confidence to work towards the world. And there has been a lot more noises that are popping up that whether China shall continue to open the door, whether China shall continue to deepen its reform. I think now President Xi's presence in Hunan is really giving the right answer, together with the resolution from the two sessions and the government report that China is continuing to revitalize the reform and further open its door. So therefore, it is there to obstruct some of the negative noises that are there to dredge the feet of the Chinese opening and reform.
Coinciding with it, by the way, we see a a specific list of policies, 24 of them, as rich as that, coming from the State Council almost on the same day, talking about China's willing to open up for more foreign investment and for more collaboration on innovation. It's a long list of preferable policies. So, Professor Liu, when you put these two things together, what are some of the major points that you think foreign investors looking at our conversation, if they are, and thinking, these are the information that maybe I should look into once again?
One is the protection of intellectual property rights. So this is something that's fundamental. And second is that are they being placed on an equal footing with many other market players within China, because we have a different type of ownership. There has been some of the differentiated, if not discriminatory, practices going on at the local level in terms of government procurement, in terms of the judicial justice and the judicial efficiency. And the other is that they are given some of the support at particularly at the local level in terms of access to finance, in terms of access to the calculation of carbon emission by using some of the fossil-based energies. And then market access is something that's largely concerned with regard not only the further the opening of the conventional areas by eliminating the manufacture area for foreign participation in terms of the barrier, and more of the finance is also being opened to them. And of course, you know, those are research and development, the programs through foreign investment is highly encouraged in the area of biotech, semiconductor, etc. It is there to support the Chinese way of modernization. But in the meantime, they're also contributing to the synchronization and integration of global economy, and in which China can also contribute to the further growth of the entire GDP of the world.
Right. Professor Xiao, you are an economist. How persuasive these measures could be, and how much trust do you see foreign investors are having these days regarding the kind of space they are likely to have according to these latest rules?
Well, I think China in the first 40 years of reform benefited a lot from reform and opening. And now we are actually entering into a period, because of the geopolitical tension, there are a lot of uncertainties, particularly the U.S.-China relations. So that's why a lot of connection between China and the America and the Europe actually faced with a lot of challenges. So the question now is that the world is very big. So we need to continue to open so that we can connect to not just the United States and Europe, but also the countries along the Belt and the Road and in the ASEAN, in the Middle East. So there's a lot of potential for a much wider, diversified opening.
But the growth rate target is very clear, 5%, about 5%. And therefore, many say it's quite a challenge. It's not about the potential, the long-term potential, but it's more about how to implement the immediate goals for the rest of the year, isn't it, Professor Xiao, briefly?
Yes, I think that in terms of GDP growth, the objective is should be achievable. But I think they're more than that, because in terms of the stock market, the property market, so there's a lot of wealth creation process we need to continue, and also a lot of challenges in technology, in new technology. So we need a really forceful opening to help the economy to overcome, the sluggishness after the COVID.
Right. Trust is one thing. Favorable policy, of course, could always winning more support from the business community. But there's also a pressure from all sides for businesses as to where they want to invest, what to invest about, and what kind of cooperation they could have, and how big will be the cooperation projects eventually be. Professor Liu, so your thoughts on the latest policies vis-a-vis all these complexities that businesses are really facing every day?
Well, one challenge the business are facing is that they have to look at the geopolitical rivals, and particularly the U.S. is really putting a lot of embargo on the high tech, especially in the area of semiconductor and biotech. Mm-hmm. And now they're also launching a number of the investigations in the right. dumping area. And so, but having said that, through my interview with so many U.S. business and many other institutions, including some of the think tanks, they still said that the interdependence between China and the United States in terms of economic cooperation mm-hmm. and this synergy and complementarity is so strong that no politicians can really disrupt that.
Right.
And the other issue is that for companies, the are not really gamblers. They calculate based on the cost and the benefit with regards to the policy prediction. So therefore, by offering the promise in terms of the rule by law instead of flexible policies is something that is utterly important. And the other is the balance between national security versus economic efficiency, because still there has been some of the cloud that looming large that requires better communication from China with regard to the espionage law and national security in terms of information. So therefore, I think decree really is they are touching upon this, that in terms of the data transformation for businesses, for multinational companies, and that was given quite much of the support instead of the civilians. So I think this really gives more confidence of those potential and existing investors. And the other is that investment requires ecosystem. It's not only those companies with money or with technology, but also they need a law firm to support, consulting firms to support, so, and also how they can really be provided with the social amenity, because some of the expats require the whole family to visit them or to live them with them for quite a period of time. So we do really need to talk about a holistic approach in terms of creating the enabling and friendly environment for foreign businesses.
Well said. Professor Xiao, your thoughts?
Well, I think China is facing a very complicated situation, both globally and internally, because on the one hand, we need to deal with some of the geopolitical issues. But on the other hand, we need at the economy level, really improve our productivity. And this is not easy, because a lot of noises at the geopolitical front could depress our confidence of the market participants,
right.
Because the market participants are really looking at the profit, the income, and the wealth. So that's why we come up with some of the newer and the more abstract objectives, slogans, which is basically trying to capture the complexity. And for example, the new means that we have a new global situation, a global environment, and also new technology, right? And the quality basically means that we really need to think about how to dig deeper into our incentive systems, governance systems, and how we really attract people, to do innovation.
Xiao Geng and Liu Baocheng, thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us. Still to come, from science fiction to artificial intelligence, my talk with a well-known Chinese sci-fi writer, Chen Qiufan. Next.
Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Welcome back. This is World Insight with me, Tian Wei. AI tools like ChatGPT and Sora have become quite household names these days. They have inspired hope and sometimes fear, and have sparked an artificial intelligence research race for top talents all over the world. We take a closer look at how latest technologies have taken their cues from science fiction. In what ways could AI upend the future? On this and more, I talked to a well-known Chinese sci-fi fiction writer, Chen Qiufan. Now, your book, 2041, co-author with Kai-Fu Lee, has been such a bestseller in the world today. But what I want to ask you is not just limited to the book, but rather about your view on AI, particularly ChatGPT.
So billions of users has this wonderful opportunity to interact with AI directly, to witness its capacity of doing different things. But also it triggered a lot of anxiety, and even fear towards the future full of uncertainty.
People have been debating about it, certainly related to OpenAI, the latest incidents about the ups and downs of the earlier founder of OpenAI. Now, and of course, corporate governance, obviously the debate related to it. So what is your view of the latest incident?
In my opinion, it's like the battle between efficient acceleration versus super love alignment. So this is two different kind of, you know, attitude towards AI. So first of all, in Silicon Valley, all those big tech companies, tycoons, they all believe in effective accelerationism because they try to push the limit of technology and they believe this could be like solving a lot of problems right now we're confronting. But on the other side, like alignment or alignmentism is talking about how we should regulate AI to be aligned with the human value and current ethical framework, and not to mention legal and law enforcement, so right. to speak. So this is a huge differences on the future.
How do you see these different parallels of development? One is about ethical, legal discussion. The other is about technologies itself. Meanwhile, corporate governance at the same time, the consumer awareness and so on. How do you see these different parallel passages are developing all at the same time? Are they?
I think right now people see like part of the reality, right? So it's not the whole picture of the reality. Of course, we're making progress on the Bentley declaration raised by China, US, EU, like over 25 countries agreed on. We have to identify the risk of AI development, and we try to settle down based on local law enforcement and regulation. And we have to engage like internationally, like from different perspectives, to working together on studying and researching these AI issues and come up with some universal solutions which can adapt to different society, which to me, it means a lot of progress right now. But meanwhile, of course, the big tech companies, they want to win the arm race, right? So everyone try to seize the time to train the big large language model, and they try to upgrade it as fast as possible to occupy the market. So basically in the future, there might be several, maybe even less than five large language model could dominate the market. So that's the huge problem, not on the technology, but on the capitalistic framework right now we're holding on.
In terms of national security geopolitics, AI and AGI will be very much tapped into and taken advantage of. Now, how do you see this field will get into your work and will get into the development of technology, the discussion of ethics?
Different countries, they have different understanding and different attitude towards technology development. For example, China will always be open and be being positive on the latest development of technologies because we think it's such a tool to uplifting our efficiency and convenience of life, right? So it's kind of, we see it in the bright side. But for European, because they have long history of being, you know, critical, thinking critically about technology and all this kind of political system. So naturally, then intrinsically, they are being suspicious about all these new things. So you can see all this kind of resistance of attitude among all the society, and not to mention the common people. So I think this is a very interesting thing to think about, that even among the human beings, like in different countries, we're not aligned with each other. So how can we come up with a universal framework to stay aligned with each other? So this is a very reflexive question to be asked. So I don't have the answer yet, but I think in the future, we need more people from humanity department to help us to trigger more new inspiration.
So you're saying that there needs to be more discussions about shared humanity and how that idea will infiltrate into the discussion about the future of AI, whether it's governance or technology-wise or other fields. Is that what you're trying to indicate?
Yes, I mean, like, in my perspective, from all the scientists, engineers, technician people I encounter, they are holding on to very single dimensional thinking of AI. So either good or bad. But I think reality is more complicated rather than that. So we need more humanity perspective, like anthropologists, sociologists, historians, maybe artists, to having all this conversation, because there are so many different layers within this single question, whether AI will do good or bad to human beings. I think it's not a simple question.
And there's a lot of a synergy taking place among all of these very different factors as we speak.
Yes, again, it's also a geopolitical question. And when we think about it in that way, so it become even more like brutal, even critical, because you think about it as a arm raising, as a Cold War, as a narrative war, maybe. So in the future, maybe we will be attacked by different kind of ideological narratives, all generated by AI. And you couldn't even tell whether it's real or not by your bare eyes. So that could be a huge problem.
Almost a year ago, I have been talking about the language itself, how it will impact and be impacted as a result of the development of AI, depending on the use of the language by the majority. Now, English, of course, was very much at the very beginning, the pioneer language. At the time, last time when we spoke, Chinese was not necessarily a very common language on ChatGPT, for example. Now we have seen some changes. Chinese language users going on ChatGPT, for example, they have much better results in terms of the answers they've been receiving and interacting. There are also Chinese version of ChatGPT, of course, different, yet you see that being developed in a cultural environment like China, like Wen Xinyi and some of the others. So how do you see, you know, language vis-a-vis the linguistic power and vis-a-vis the development of technologies that are present today related to the development of ChatGPT, like?
I ask the same question to different model, like OpenAI and Baidu One. So basically, they get me totally different answer. So maybe the opposite answer. So this is so fascinating that reminds us in the future, we are not living in the same world. We're not living in the same narratives. We are living in different kind of narrative separated by all this AI could be. And what concerns me more is right now we try to using synthetic data to train the model because we have not enough human data in the foreseeable future. So that means all of this data will be generated by AI and feedback to AI to self-train it. So that means we generate fake information from synthetic information. So this is even more worrisome to me. And that means maybe in the future, our kids, our next generation, they're living in a world full of false news and misinformation, and they don't have the capability to identify which is which. So this is something I think not everyone are fully aware of its risk yet.
Do you feel we have been too much artificially trying to fragment our own societies rather than putting enough efforts to look for the common ground?
AI is just like other technology and media. It's amplifier. So if we ourselves were fragmented, so it basically blew up all this differentiation. So we see all these differences here and there. It just becomes something bigger than it's supposed to be, right? But if we can use it to turn around the lens and we try to seek for the common ground, we see the humanity in common, maybe we can see a better side of humanity in our society.
In a time of dramatic change, at least seen by our generation, it's always wonderful to go to the history to revisit, but at the same time to embrace life. Every detail of it could shine in the heart and comes here as well.
Yes, feel grateful and be humble as water, as always.
And that's my latest conversation with Chen Qiufan, a well-known Chinese science fiction writer. That's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of my team, thanks for being with us.